I'm Lance Carter, and you're listening to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. So, welcome back to Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris. They've been missed. The directing pair behind 2006's wonderful Little Miss Sunshine are back with the equally wonderful Ruby Sparks, starring Zoe Kazan, who also makes her screenwriting debut, and Paul Dano. The film is about a young novelist, played by Dano, who is suffering from writer's block when the enchanting Ruby Sparks, played by Kazan, comes to him in a dream. He frantically starts to write out his idea of the perfect woman, but he gets the ultimate surprise when a week later, she turns out to be real. The film is smart and funny and at times sad and dark, which, for me, made me love it even more. It's definitely not your typical romantic comedy, and that's a good thing. I can't tell you how much I enjoy talking with the pair. Luckily for them, I was only allowed 15 minutes, but trust me, I could have chatted with them all day. They're both incredibly intelligent people and smart filmmakers. In the interview, we talk about how they work with actors, the sometimes difficult process of casting, and how they workshopped, by themselves, one particularly hard scene in the film. I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers, because every little click does help. And don't forget to check out our Actor Resources page, other interviews, and our daily news items. You can find all of that out on the site and more, dailyactor.com. And now, here's Jonathan and Valerie.
I gotta tell you right off the bat, that is the best movie poster of the year. And I'm so glad it's that cool, because I never understand why movie posters aren't cooler.
Oh, thank you.
Because, I love the Midnight in Paris movie poster. Sometimes you see a movie poster and you just go, perfect. And then when you see just this plain one with somebody's face, you go, really?
It's like two faces.
Thank you for saying it. And you're the first person to mention it. And we drove Fox crazy. They did 80 designs.
Wow.
Designs.
And they tried. I mean, it wasn't like, I think they were... They really like the idea that the concept comes through in the poster, but there were just too many pictures of Paul with things exploding out of his head.
We wanted something that was a little more elegant and suggesting a story, but also creating questions in the image. You know, so
it's a little. There's a website of movie posters. What's it called?
I don't know. It's the cliches of movie posters. Uh-huh.
And there's a whole thing about romantic comedies on white backgrounds with women in red dresses. So we were like, oh, jeez, I guess we've fallen into that trap. But, it's okay. You can't avoid all cliches at all times, right?
One thing I really liked about the film is kind of the magic of her appearing. It's off stage in the background. And I think normally you'd be like, well, how'd she get there? But you don't care. Or at least I didn't care.
Thank you. That was a very deliberate decision that we all made to, you know...
Not waste time.
What would make it more real than, you know... I mean, there's no, like, a comet flying over or pixie dust.
Yeah.
Or something. It's not going to really explain it. Oh, well, therefore... Oh, now I get it. I wouldn't, you know... So we just liked it off camera, and we liked that... signs of her start popping up, and then she's there. So
that was almost the first thing we spoke to Zoe about after we read the script. We kind of all agreed, and we knew that we were on the same page. We said, we think that this should be treated just absolutely real. That once she appears in his life, she's a real person. We don't really question that. I mean, one of the his brother questions it, but. We tried to deal with everything as you would in life. If your character that you were writing just appeared in your kitchen, how would you deal with it?
Yeah.
As opposed to how'd she get there? You know, you wouldn't be going, how'd she get here?
She is there.
She's just there. You got to deal with her. Yeah.
Now, when you would say something like that to her, since she wrote the screenplay, is it something where she's pretty easy and open to suggestions? And how does that compare to when you guys did videos? Like, God, the Tonight video is the most beautiful video, maybe in the history of videos.
Aww,
it's so amazing.
Wow.
I don't even like Smashing Pumpkins. His voice doesn't match it. But that video is so magical. How hard is it when you deal with the artist that actually has their vision and you're going, we're trying to make it a...
You got to have a shared vision. I think that's...
And you have to have people whom... The work is more important than their ego, the authorship.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And so I think for Zoe, whose parents are both screenwriters, and she's watched them have to work with directors. We all were focusing on what's best for this story and not like who came up with the idea.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
I think, you know, luckily she chose to work with us. So it wasn't like we were being imposed on her. We were happy to be working together. And she is, she says she likes puzzles. So we would give her, you know, certain notes on the script and she'd kind of go off like, treat it like a puzzle. Like, how can I do, oh, I see what they want. Okay, I'm going to try this. And, you know, she was just very open to, I think, you know, we felt like we wanted to kind of expand the range of the movie a little bit. Like, try to find
give it a bottom.
Yeah.
You know, so that the scene that shall go unnamed, where he, you know, writes her, you know, that really evolved in the rewrite process.
And all the way through.
All the way.
Like we talked about last night, it really was probably the scene that changed the most and got the most, you know, it just was a discovery process throughout, because it was hard to imagine exactly how that should play out.
Yeah.
It was the least like anything in our world. And so it was one of the more exciting things for us to take on, but it was also the biggest mystery. So we went as far as hiring two other actors, and we workshopped that scene so we could see it.
Whoa.
You know, in advance,
and not put Paul and Zoe through it,
and not make them try different things, and then we acted out the scene ourselves to see what the feelings were. So
we did as much as we could to anticipate what would be right, but then I think you know, a lot happens as your understanding of a movie as you're filming it, you know, changes and deepens, and so it helped that we did that scene at the end of the shoot. But you know, throughout, I mean, we tried to get the script to a place so that when we started shooting, when she was the actress in the movie, she didn't have to be thinking about the script. She could just entrust us with it and kind of let go of those duties. There are times where things came up and we had to do a little bit of rewriting during the production, but there's very little, actually, I think, compared to in so many films, scripts that we actually get where they'll say, well, we're still working on the script, but we want to shoot it in 2 months, or, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, you know, you usually say no to those because I don't think those are the best conditions to try to solve big problems. So.
That that final scene that you were talking about, what was that day like on set? Because, I mean, and when you're watching, it's kind of brutal and sad.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it was the middle of the night. Yeah, it was all shot at night.
I think we all worried about what it would be like to shoot that scene, so we put it at the end of the schedule, and we shot it about 4 in the morning. And each take was continuous.
She
did all the scene, one bit after the other. And we
did about 10-minute takes.
Yeah, and we did 8 takes, and it was challenging and
both physically and emotionally, psychologically. You know,
the scene was really written in its final form the morning we shot it. We sat down and put together all the commands that he was going to have. I mean, I'd rather you not.
Oh yeah,
spoil it out,
but
yeah,
just
yeah,
so you understand is. Yeah.
I'm just going to spoil the whole movie.
But it was hard, like, you know, for Zoe, I think, to write that scene. It was hard for her. That's maybe the one place where being the actress and the writer and writing to write what her boyfriend is going to tell her to do as the actor that she wrote. You know,
it was a meta collapse.
I can't do it. Yeah. You know?
I mean, what's really important to us is that the film would go to that place, that we were not going to be like this strict, by-the-book romantic comedy that's just going to stay light and fluffy, that this was going to be a roller coaster ride, and that we were going to ask the audiences to go with us and go through these feelings that aren't necessarily usually put in the same movie.
See, it's funny because I have a love-hate relationship with that scene. I love that you did go there, and I love that it just becomes such a dark place, and it's happening so fast. It's such a visually stunning thing to watch. But part of me doesn't like it because it makes him so unlikable at that point that when the end comes, I can't, like, I still kind of root for them that work.
Right.
But you're going, like, I still think you're kind of a turd. You're this neurotic. Well, and whereas Groundhog Day, you could make the same case. Like, Bill Murray just wants to sleep with her. He doesn't give a shit about anybody else. But we still kind of root for him just because through the whole movie he's funny and watching him.
Right.
You know,
it's challenging.
And
the audience.
I totally understand what you're saying. And I would just say that when he goes through that... Mm-hmm. He's really doing it to both of them. It is as much a self-destructive thing. I mean, he's in the end, makes her say the one thing that he hates most in this world. You know, you're a genius. Yeah. So that he's burning down the house.
Yeah.
I also think it's important, and maybe why it is hard to watch, but, you know, I think what's interesting is if you were given that power to do the slightest change to somebody, if you really knew you had that ability to make... a slight tweak, and you do that.
You realize it's not such great power.
Yeah, and then you realize once you've crossed that line into I want to do a little adjustment. Calvin is really trying. After that, he's really just trying to get it right again.
He's
not actually enjoying the control.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I think that at that point he knows he can't, you know, continue along this path, and he has to put an end to it. And so it's really him putting an end to something that isn't working in the way that he does it, you know, is to make himself realize that this can never happen again. I will never, you know. So there is, I hope, you know, for him, it's a moment of, you know, understanding. It's not like it's up in his head.
Well, yeah, he does let her go, so that shows that he did change.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
He ultimately does
the only
it out
way
of
to really
love
make her real. Is to set her free. By finally letting go of his control,
it's a little bit of an exorcism, you know.
Yeah,
like but facing a really ugly part of himself, I think, in doing that. And you know, I think a lot of us, if we were given that first choice to do the little thing, we would, and that inevitably leads him to this place where.
But I'm very interested in hearing these reactions because it is the thing that as filmmakers. You look to
well, and the good
regulate.
Thing is, if I have something like that, that doesn't make me. It doesn't ruin a film for me. It
no,
just means
no,
okay, yeah, because
no,
I think
exactly.
I can
you
wrestle
no, it's,
with.
It's yeah. something you wrestle with, as opposed to just a lifeless film. That
oh yeah,
sort of
I'll never forget lands. Being 13 and watching Siskel and Ebert argue because one of them said, "I can't like this movie. There's not a single likable character," and the other one says, "You don't have to like every character." I thought
exactly.
You can still like the ride.
I need to overall have some connection to the person, but they can have unlikable moments.
Yeah.
And so,
I totally agree.
That's what I grew up on too.
I mean, really, not that we want to start arguments, but we do like the idea that people will leave the theater and want to discuss that because there are people who say I can't forgive him. There are people who say, "Oh, wait a minute, he learned." I can forgive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an interesting. You know, it's an interesting issue of. Like, can you forgive and can you grow from one relationship to the next? Hopefully, we think you can. But
it's like not for me. It's not one of those films where you just leave the theater and then you go about your day. You're still thinking about it. You know,
that was our goal, and that's what we like in movies ourselves. So,
and it's fun to see. You know, I think our first film was we were surprised by getting such a positive response, and this is very. We've been very happy with the response to this movie, but we think that it is more risky. You know, it's asking a little more of people, and so it's kind of interesting to, it's a discussion. You know, there was a lot for us to discuss after that film, but this is different and maybe more.
You know what's so odd, since you just mentioned Little Miss Sunshine, aside from it just being a great movie. It's weird that that's your first movie and you've got so much of it so right. Like, I think back, I only saw it once in the theater, so if I remember the scene
wrong.
But you did a scene where Greg Kinnear in the bus the VW, is being such a dick. And Alan Arkin says something, and it was just a perfect... I'm probably totally butchering how that's... Yeah. But I just loved how it's... Because he would do that. He would say, look, this guy's being a dick to his wife. I'm going to jump in here and kind of... And it's just all these little touches you had were just perfect. And I wish more filmmakers could do that when they make movies. And just do it right. It's, you know...
Well, that's very nice of you to say. I mean... We are slow at what we do.
It's like slow food, you know, the cooking. You know.
I think people make movies sometimes too quickly, and they don't. Yeah. They don't sort of.
They need to incubate, as ideas.
Well, I sometimes wonder: do they watch Days and go, "Well, no character would do that. A boss wouldn't say he'd be fired."
No, exactly. Like, that's the thing.
That's why. I mean, we like films that have a mix of kind of, you know, a little bit of tragedy, a little bit of comedy, and you know that interests us because that's how we experience life. And so we always, the rule for doing a film like that is just, does it feel true? Does it feel real? Like, would I do what that character is doing in that situation?
Even if the situation is
absurd.
A woman appearing out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You have to.
Well, put yourself in that. And what would you do? And so often I watch movies and I go, why is that person doing that? I hate that.
And my friends always say, well, just because you wouldn't do it. And I said, no. There's an inherent logic in that character they've showed us, and that character wouldn't do that. You know, and
it's like, exactly. It drives me insane. Because you read a lot of scripts that do that too, where you're kind of going with a character and then they do something really stupid.
Our friend Michael Arndt, who wrote Little Miss Sunshine, he said characters are allowed one bad decision, and usually like that. That's what sets the whole story in motion.
Yeah.
But when they make bad decisions over and over, you kind of go, okay, I wash my hands of you. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, we could go on.
Yeah. I was just saying back there that. I was surprised when I took a glance at Rotten Tomatoes to see what the movie was getting, and I'm like, okay, high 70s. But one critic was tearing it apart, saying, well, it's, you know, you can't believe such a preposterous story, a woman. And I'm thinking, like, really? That's your argument? So what did you say when you watched Batman or Superman? Then I start looking at some of his reviews because I was fascinated by this critic, and he liked 21 Jump Street. And I'm like, okay, the cops make an arrest and they start shooting their guns in the air, they wouldn't be cops after that.
Right. Yeah.
No, exactly. I love you for that.
Thank you. Because
drives me insane. That's why it's
weird.
We don't read. I don't really read the reviews. He does. I can't.
But you know, that's the thing about this trip that's been interesting, and it's great talking to you guys because film criticism and film writing seems to be kind of falling apart a little bit. And
because there are no jobs anymore.
It's such a great discipline. It's such a great compliment. It's part of the
continuum.
It's the second half of filmmaking is really the interaction it has with an audience, and that debate is led by film writers.
I did read one review. It said the title was 500 Days of Bummer.
Clever.
But you get the sense that they're... I'm sorry.
The whole thing is just about how clever he is. It's not really a review.
You know, there's like no
it's
one...
It's kind if, of a spite.
Write a bad review. That's fine. But just do it with some insight. I just don't need to watch you kind
of... criticize her for being part of his family. Like stuff like... When you think, okay, if you're going to attack me on that, then we had no... We had no hope of ever getting you on our side, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing.
On set, in regards to actors, how do you guys deal with them? Are you of one mind in sort of the performance that you're looking for?
Well, we do a lot of prep. So as we were talking about in that one scene, we act out a lot of the scenes at home and do a full breakdown of every scene as if they're short films in their own right. What's the inciting incident, what's the climax, how it all works. So we have it heavily broken down
in our
notes. And then we go in to shoot it, and we don't necessarily share everything that we've thought of,
prepped,
but we're ready so that anything comes up, we kind of have a...
Usually if something isn't working, you kind of go back to what you're thinking, and sometimes it's a simple adjustment, but because you've thought about it and you know the feeling you're going for... You have a way of, you know, kind of a new angle to try, and but we have to be a lot of the prep too is just for us to get on the same page so that on the day we're not arguing about I don't think he's overdoing it, or you know, it helps us look at it, and pretty much we're always saying we agree, like, that take was a good one, didn't like the last one as much, you know?
Yeah.
But we try and only give, only have one of us give notes to an actor. It changes, but if one of us feels something...
In a certain scene, you're kind of working...
We will go talk to the actor, and then we'll kind of stay with that actor for the rest of the scene, so there's no...
But by the... Usually, like, certainly with this, where we're working with Paul and Zoe so closely, either one of us can really, you know, talk to...
And we whisper in their ears, so they never...
Yeah.
You don't want to, like...
Announce
to everyone a correction or, you know... To shame them, or also just to... You want the other actors to be surprised about what they're going to do. So.
But then, you know, I think that the big thing is hire the right actors and then talk as little as possible.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have a fantastic cast.
I know.
So
they're
good.
Incredible. Like, Chris Messina, we really were so happy to get him in this film because that role was... really key.
I'm sorry, who?
Chris Messina, the brother.
He knocks it out of the park.
He's so good. Isn't he great? We love him.
And, you know, it was really fun because when we had our LA premiere last week, a bunch of his friends came, a lot of actor friends.
And he had never seen it with an audience.
And, so. And they all came to us and said, you know, you finally got the Chris that we knew was there.
That's funny.
You know,
and it's a bigger role. I mean, he's played a lot of great roles, you know, I mean, great little roles like in Julie and Julia.
Away We Go.
Christina Barcelona. Oh, you know. Well, he's always popping up in these films with these little parts, and he's just... I think he does TV, too, but he's just... We fought for him, even though, you know, the studio was like, well, he doesn't look anything like Paul.
And we go, we know.
Oh.
But we actually added a shot in the film where we see in the scrapbook a picture of Calvin's dad, and we said... Just get us someone who looks like Chris.
Small and dark.
And we'll put him in, and Calvin will look like his mom, and Chris will look like the dad, and we'll be done with
everyone
it.
Everyone will be fine.
It's weird. You think studios would just say, oh, you got Ellie Quill, and you can do whatever you want for the rest of the
wouldn't
cast.
You?
You think
you would. I mean, that's how we felt. But,
you know, we had Final Cut, which really meant we could cast whoever we wanted.
Cool.
They agreed. They funded the film with Paul and Zoe. That was
They didn't. It wasn't casting dependent, which was really. Good. But you know, they still just fight you.
I know.
Like they just want But you know, when you're passionate enough, like with Chris, we were just there was. We felt like there was nobody else to play that part. We just.
You know, I initially was wondering like how you guys can be married and work together, how you wouldn't fight. But then I'm listening to you guys talk, I could see how that would totally enhance the marriage. You guys could go out to dinner going like, what was he thinking on that take? You know, and just having
fun, exactly.
You know.
Oh, no.
It's like it would be so much fun.
Subject matter.
No, and you know, this job is so hard and so taxing at times that to be able to download and process and go, you know, am I crazy, or was that a stupid meeting, or do they know what they're talking about, or you know, or I really blew it, you know, and you know, have
just even I mean, it's great to share the good times, and it's really great to share the hard times, and you know, not be alone. So
we've never said, "Honey, how was your day?"
Yeah,
to each other, 'cause we know.
In meetings, are one of you ever good cop, bad cop, if needs to be?
Well, there are times where, like, one of us can play the more stubborn part, and then the other one can be listening a little more, and then we can always say, well, let us go talk about it. You know, that's another great thing. It's like, can I go think about it in the other room? It helps that we have this, you know, this process where everyone understands, well, they need to figure out what they want to do before they come back to us. So it just, I don't know. I think there are such advantages to being in a partnership, and you know, I'm happy that there are more. I was so happy to see the Coen brothers win, because it just was like an acknowledgement that collaborative teams, brother, sister, whatever it is, it's nice for the Academy and people to acknowledge that, you know, partnerships are part of making films, and collaboration is part of filmmaking, you know.
There's a new movie coming out about Alfred Hitchcock and the making of Psycho.
I auditioned for that.
Did
you? Oh, really?
Yeah. Martin Balsam. I don't know where they got that. Yeah, I auditioned for that part.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you get it?
No, no.
Oh, no.
That would have been. I had two auditions for it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could see you could do that.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
That'd be cool. But it's a cool story, and the it really centers around the fact that Alma, Hitchcock's wife.
Did you read the whole script?
No,
absolutely involved in all his movies and behind the scenes, help make them what they are. So yeah, here you have the most celebrated auteur.
And he almost had a total breakdown on Psycho. So, if it weren't for her, she helped him through it. So it's really interesting, you know.
Hey, can you guys sign this for me?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. Aren't these nice?
I know. Did you
get
the,
I love them. I've been using the soundtrack.
Thanks, guys, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thank you so much for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.